Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
If you had the chance to unplug digitally for an entire year, would you take it? I suspect most of us would think that would be too much, but perhaps we should. Interesting story about an atheist who unplugged digitally for an entire year and found God. Welcome to the show, everyone. Don Johnson here. Timory, welcome.
Hello there. So did this, are you telling me this lady completely got rid of cell phone, computer, email, everything?
I believe that is the case, including email. So I don't know how she interacted with anyone. I can't even imagine it.
You mean it's possible
what?
To live without media?
Who has ever done this in the history of humanity?
That means they would have to shut us off, John.
Yeah, exactly. We wouldn't want that, would we? No, it's a very interesting story. A few years ago, Esther Emery, who was an atheist at the time, decided, I'm burnt out. I'm desperate for a reset. That's her words. And she decided to take a year hiatus from technology. But interestingly, here's what happened. What she calls her digital fast led her into a profound experience with the risen Christ. And in the story, she chronicles how she completely cut herself off digitally, but in that process, found God. And she says, I completely credit my year without internet for my conversion to Christianity. But that's not because I think cell phones are secular demonic things. It's simply that it's hard to make an about-face change like that when people are watching you. Even if I did have certain ideas or a deep feeling of longing, I couldn't change my identity to a Christian identity. Stepping into a room without mirrors changed all of that. It became a matter of the soul on the inside, not a matter of my reflection in mirrors. And at that level, it was a completely worthy and beautiful journey. It was more of a love story than anything. I just fell in love with Jesus, and I wanted more. I think this is very profound and an underreported aspect of what it means for us to carry around our phones all the time mm-hmm. and be on the internet all the time, emailing with people all the time. We're never really alone. And it's not even that we're not alone. It's not that we have people in the room, but we have an audience.
We always care about our image too much. What people are saying, have we said enough that we've entertained them, that they're feeling connected to us, that we feel connected to them, and that they know something not about who we are, but something that we want them to see and think and perceive in some way and have a certain response about who we are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, life is all performance. If there's always cameras on you. Just think about that. You know, the old MTV show, Real World. I guess you're probably a little too young for that. But that was the first sort of, quote, reality show. And you lived in a house full of cameras, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, just imagine that you're living in a house full of cameras. Are you going to act the same as you would in a house that's not full of cameras?
But we are living in a world full of cameras. We're constantly aware of, well, where is a phone right there taking a picture? Am I possibly in it? Who's taking a selfie? Can I photobomb the person? Like, we really do look around us all the time, from our Twitter handle, our Instagram post, to the selfie being taken from someone else. Well, am I in the photo? Am I around? Is someone aware of me? And all of a sudden, when you take all of that away, and not that it's not around you to some extent, you have to look at things in a different way. And I think, Don, it's fascinating to me, because one of the first things you mentioned is that suddenly she said she had to make an effort with real people.
Yeah, well, and you think about, it's not just that we're out in the world and people are pointing their phones at us. I've noticed this with my kids, even when they're at home. They have the knowledge that they are living in the presence of others if they have the phone there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like being, you know, in high school, right? High school's tough because you're always sort of having to put on a face for other people, right? You're always, there's peer pressure. people with phones have that 24 hours a day. There's always that notion that, well, somebody's waiting for my return text. Somebody's FaceTiming me right now. Always the pressure of being in the presence of others.
But also the comparison of others, and not the comparison of the reality of that person, but the comparison of the best highlights of that person,
yeah.
Usually.
And, well, the idea that everyone is watching you all the time. I've noticed this being a talk show host now for, you know, over 15 years. There's a difference between talking with someone on the air and talking with someone face to face, or even just talking with them on the phone off the air. You're never, if I bring an interviewer on that's not a Christian, I'm never expecting that they're going to even admit that I'm right, right? I've done a lot of public debating, whether it's on radio or whatever. You never expect a public debate or a public discussion to have any sort of transformational thing happen at that time.
In public.
No, because it's in public. You're out there performing for others. Well, I'm not going to come on the air and admit that you're right, Dawn, or whatever. I'm not going to do it either,
right?
Our
pride gets in the way naturally.
Well, of course it does, right? Because to do that about face in public like that is simply not going to happen.
Yeah, well, I think that this is even a lesson for those social media posts. While we might be posting in a ton of things to have an influence, the debates aren't always effective because we become so prideful and competitive in the midst of them.
Oh, yeah. I gave up commenting online years and years ago. But that's the point, because you cannot expect that a debate happening in public with everyone watching is going to be the same. And I think this is what she's saying. Like, why did I have to get away from all of that media? She says, well, I'm not going to change. I'm not going to become a Christian in the presence of all of you people watching. I'm not going to make that big life change. If anything, I'm going to, you know, continue my Instagrams and Facebooks and tweets and all this stuff, putting on my face that everything's fine. I'm perfectly happy. Because to make a change shows that, oh, I mean, what? Why would you change? Unless something wasn't quite perfect before, right?
Yeah.
And that's what's so difficult about public conversions. That's why it's very difficult for people in a public ministry,
yes,
or some sort of, to convert.
I've known a lot of people, especially in the Protestant world, who are huge advocates for life. They fight against abortion. They protect the children in the womb. And I know a lot of them who suddenly begin to become interested in Catholicism,
yeah,
in the clarity of the teaching on the moral issues. They then start to dive deeper and learn about the spirituality and the fact that they're maybe not in communion with the church, but because they've rejected communion, the Eucharist. And I can't tell you, I've seen a lot of different circumstances where these people then choose not to convert because they're incredible influencers within their community, but they don't want to lose people. They don't,
yeah,
want to disappoint people because they've suddenly become Catholic.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this lady goes on and says a couple of more interesting things. She was asked, how did unplugging from the internet improve your connection with God over time? And she says, I discovered a kind of silence that was essentially synonymous with prayer. In the silence, I experienced this awareness that I was so, so tiny and something else out there was so big. It was overwhelming and beautiful, and I always felt better afterwards. And I just throw that out there. How much is social media and the internet and being always connected digitally, how much is that affecting our prayer life?
Yeah, you know, kind of from my perspective, because I'm, you know, young adult, single, live completely by myself. I don't have, I guess you could say, the noise perpetually around me of other people.
Right.
I have a lot of silence. You know, I work from home some days. I take a lot of long drives and travel. So I have a lot of silence around me. And it's interesting because I hear so many people, or I notice so many people constantly having to have music in their ears, a cell phone in their hand, whatever it is. And for me, it could be very much easily the same way, where you feel this necessity to connect with people. But what I've found, especially the last couple of years, that one, there's so much peace in that silence, and that you really are. I can't imagine not being Christian. Who are you in dialogue with? Just yourself? Or is it prayer when you're in that silence? I mean, whether it's taking a shower, cleaning for a couple hours in a quiet room, whatever it is, there's such silence. And allowing for that silence really to be there and not just to fill it, you know, whether it's, okay, I'm going to watch a movie while I do my hair to make sure there's noise in the background.
Right, right.
You know, and I notice the difference when I do that, how there's a deeper dialogue of faith. There's a deeper self-reflection when you allow that silence to be around you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think this is one of those sort of no-brainer things. Like, yes, if you want to have that relationship with God, there has to be at some point in your life silence. And I think you're right, Timory. Many people simply do not have that, even when they are alone.
Yes.
Now, I don't have a ton of that alone time, although I do get to go to the office occasionally and the kids aren't screaming or whatever. But even then, I notice the pull of the internet is there.
Yes.
Even when it is quiet, I'm like, oh, I'll just check this, or I'll just interact mm-hmm. with this person, or I'll just reply to this email. And I think they're on the negative side. Well, a lot of this is negative, but on the negative side, the digital age sort of pulls us away, even in those silent times. But then there's a lot of people who are afraid of the silence, I think,
yes,
because they don't have their relationship with God, mm-hmm. right? So God's not there to interact with them. I mean, he is there waiting, obviously, but they don't see that. They see life as essentially pointless and something to get through. And mm-hmm. they look at the digital distractions as a great thing because it distracts me from
yes.
the silence. I don't want that silence. I got to have the music on. I don't want to be thinking alone about my life.
Mm-hmm.
I want something to keep me looking elsewhere.
Well, people, I think that to be uncomfortable is bad, but actually discomfort is good because we usually grow in the midst of discomfort, or we have to face something that maybe we've been avoiding for some reason. So here's a woman who left her media, sat in the silence, really was forced to interact with people, and she grew. But how can we enter back into that media, especially for those people who maybe gave it up during Lent?
Yeah.
How can we look at the purpose of it and use it well and enjoy it, but not let it pull us away from relationships with others and ultimately with God?
Timory and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Don Johnson Media. From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending.
Trending
with Don and Timory, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
So, Don, we were talking about this woman who had an incredible conversion after having stepped away from her media for a year. From atheism to Christianity, from maybe a little bit of loneliness to suddenly seeing the pain of going through effort and then developing deeper friendships.
Just as a quick note, she claims it saved her marriage.
Wow. Like,
they said, well, was this hard on your marriage to not be? She's like, no, it saved it. It opened space and silence for her and her husband to be together again. They found solace in very ordinary moments, making dinner together, sitting together, rebuilding comfort in small ways, she said.
I love that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It actually helped them address the hurt. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. all of these good things we talked about. But then you were going to say, well, how do we can't just...
We see the good. So then yeah. how can we bring... Because the reality is that social media, cell phones, all of this is a part of our life. And maybe you gave up the computer, watching TV, Facebook, whatever it was for Lent. But I want to ask, it's good to do that. It's also good if you decide you want to leave that behind. But also if you are kind of coming back into it, maybe you recognize this is an area you need to work on. I think for each element of media, whether it's our cell phone, our Instagram, email, what is the purpose that it's serving? Am I using my cell phone to text when I really could just pick up the phone and call, even if maybe there's a few more days distance between the conversation I have with that person? Maybe it's a little more meaningful. Or I think a big one is I have to look at social media, Don. And I feel like this is a big one because I've taken big periods of time where I have it, but I just don't post. And I've learned that there have been times where I've shared too much on social media, and there have been times also where some people who I deeply love from around the world that I just haven't stayed in contact with, partially because I don't have time or I haven't made the effort, where they've actually reached out to me. I have a friend who's done missionary work in Africa, Tokyo, all over the world. And I remember about a year ago, she said, yeah, I look to your social media for, you know, a picture. I just want to see what you look like or see your face, and you don't post anything.
Yeah.
And it was a lesson for me that there is good in social media, that some people really just want to reconnect and see that you're doing well. But then there's also, I think, where a lot of us struggle with comparison or saying, well, these people have this and I don't. Or I know a lot of, especially young women who are struggling, who are single, who want to have a family and marriage, and how it is painful every time they turn on social media, especially around holidays, yeah. Valentine's Day, as all these engagements and births are taking place. It touches their heart. We actually had a listener, Don, who reached out and said, you know, I myself have been working through that loneliness, and around the holidays, especially Easter, these holy days, it becomes so challenging for me.
Well, and it's hard as a poster because you're not putting the negative stuff out there.
Yes.
And I understand why you're not. Like, what if, oh, it was a terrible day again, you know? And I don't, actually, every so often you see that, right? Like the Eeyore person on Facebook or whatever,
gosh,
and you're like,
yeah.
Oh, really? Another negative post. But on the other hand, everyone else is just putting all of the filtered
highlights.
Images yes. from their great day, and it may have been a terrible day, but they did find that nice, you know, cute thing, so they, all right, that'd be nice.
Yeah,
I don't have a problem with that. I mean, mm-hmm. if I take a good picture, Instagram originally was sort of the artist's social media, right, or the photographer's one, where you would mm-hmm. take your fancy pictures and share them there, and you know, that's great, I don't have a problem with that. But the effect is that you do get sort of a sanitized, filtered view yes. of everyone's life. You get the highlights, and that, yeah, that can be tough.
Yeah, and so maybe the challenge is to see the tool. Is my Instagram to stay connected to people? And if so, how often or what is my content that I should be sharing? Just that I'm wonderful, right? Just that I'm wonderful, or am I sharing something? I think all of us struggle with this.
Well, and there is different sort of purposes
yes.
to social media, isn't it? And we kind of understand that, right? Like, there's the public pages where we sort of understand that the person there is going to be keeping you updated on events that they're doing and products
yes.
that they have. And I don't have a problem with that. I do the same mm-hmm. thing. And then there's others. Well, it's mostly for my friends and family. It's a very private list. And sometimes it's in between. Like
yes.
my list, you know, my Facebook friend list, a lot of people, frankly, I don't know. That's okay. You know, mm-hmm. we've interacted maybe once or twice. And then you've got all the friends and family there. And I don't know. I mean, I think there's various uses for it.
Yes.
And if we're sort of aware of that and we don't disparage people for using it differently, I don't have a yeah. big problem with that. What the writer here, the one who took the year off, her thing is, now that she's gone back to it, she says, I have to have every day built in a specific time of rest from it.
That's good.
Yeah. So I go into it knowing that I'm going to shut it off from this time to this time or whatever. Or maybe I'm only going to have it on from this time to this mm-hmm. time. You've got to sort of walk into it with some built-in parameters, or it will have a tendency to take over your life. That
True.
Seems pretty reasonable to me.
It's okay to leave your phone in the car. It's okay to not take pictures of everything. This is something I've realized, you know, I really don't need a picture of everything.
But you know, when you're walking around
moments,
without your phone, don't you feel like you're
missing? Feel naked?
You feel like you're missing arms and legs and stuff.
And I think, but you know, part of that is that
what if somebody wants to get in touch with me, Timory?
You know, I actually don't even think that's part of it. At least for me, my experience was, it wasn't that, what if someone, that was a long time ago. Now it's more so, what if I feel uncomfortable and I don't have my phone to rely on? Because I personally think yeah. I can be a little socially awkward. I think I do get nervous around people sometimes. I'm very introverted. And so the phone can be that kind of barrier of, yeah. okay, I'm uncomfortable, I can just pick up my phone. Or I also just like to be doing stuff, but it helps me now to recognize, you know, look up and say hello to a random stranger, or just be okay staring at the wall or whatever it is for a little while.
What happens though, Timory, if you're the only one in a group without your phone?
Happens to me every day.
Then you feel like a complete loser, don't you?
Yep, I do. But well, and I really tried to disconnect from my phone. So I have to tell you, it actually happens to me a lot, and a lot of sometimes surprising circumstances. You'd think people would see, hey, we're all on our phones and she's just sitting here. And it, I think, is a lesson for me that to also, like, one, not be judgmental when, like, they aren't seeing me in a sense, right?
Well, that's the whole problem, isn't it? That you're on your phone, you're in the presence of other people.
Yeah.
You're not in the presence of whoever is right there in front of you.
But they're also then not seeing themselves, and sometimes I'm just sad for them. So I try to, like, engage in conversation, depending on who it is. My siblings actually have gotten really good at having a balance, but my poor siblings will be like, okay, come on, let's look. But they, I have to say, have been really good at seeing the impact of not having their phones around and how it brings about so much more joy when you really have the opportunity to talk to people in person.
It's
and
hard.
I've stopped spending time with some people who can't get off their phones. If I'm just sitting there and they keep picking up their phone, they clearly have other priorities. I go, okay, I don't need to spend time with you if, you know, and I don't say that, but I just kind of let the relationship or the friendship fizzle out if that's how it's going to go down in a sense. Because then there's no friendship there. It's just both of us sitting on our phones, being around each other, not being together.
Yeah, which is sad.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot to talk about. I think also, you know, we're talking about so much anymore, Dawn, transgenderism, gender ideology. And I've been following this story for the last couple of years, and it's so interesting. So Dolce & Gabbana. Dolce & Gabbana, what do you think about their clothes?
Oh, I wear them all the time.
Every day.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
Right? I had a bunch of
them. I couldn't tell you if I actually have ever seen. Maybe I probably have. Somebody else is wearing them. I shop for clothes so little.
I hate shopping.
Like, I go for years between buying clothing items.
Is the truth that your wife just buys the clothes?
No.
No?
Actually, I mean, sometimes she will. I just... Clothes is one of those things where... Well, I mean, I have some clothes in the closet. I can just wear those, especially if the budget is tight. It's really low on my priority list. Unfortunately, I've had to do better at this, especially when you go out on public speaking and you can't look like a complete slob. So I have had to go and purchase some new clothes. But anyway, yeah, Dolce and Gabbana is not going to be my first stop. I'll tell you that.
Well, interesting about them, they've kind of hit the news over the last couple months again because they had yet another family-friendly runway and kind of marketing campaign that they continue to have this theme, which it's interesting, Dawn, because it's very surprising to a lot of people. Dolce & Gabbana, while agreeably split up now, were a same-sex attracted couple who had dated and interacted for a long time and now are separated. But they always come back, especially Dolce, to their Italian familial roots that I think are so fascinating, and they have some of the most profound statements.
So they're a gay couple.
They were. Yeah.
Still, though, gay. Like, they're still identified.
I think they still have same-sex attraction that they're working through. I actually kind of question with Dolce what's going on in his life, because there actually was a statement over the last couple of months where someone was coming out criticizing him, and he said, "Please don't refer to me as gay."
Hmm.
And I thought that that was kind of just a good lesson in general, that we should never refer to someone just as gay. There's a person who's struggling with same-sex attraction. And I think that statement kind of attested in a sense to that.
Yeah. So exactly what is the problem that people are having with being positive towards your Italian family? I'm trying to wrap my head around what the issue is.
I think the problem is that the automatic idea that is that if you are, you know, someone who experiences same-sex attraction, gay, lesbian, whatever it might be, that you should then advocate for same-sex marriage, for adoption of children within those circumstances, and then also you should be in favor of in vitro fertilization. And this is what's fascinating, is that Dolce comes out and he doesn't believe this. When he was interviewed not too long ago, he said, he was talking about how, yes, I am gay, I cannot have a child. Get this, Dawn. He says, "I believe that one cannot have everything in life. If it's not there, it means it's not meant to be. It's important to deprive oneself of something."
Oh.
And he goes on, "Life has a natural path. There are some things that should be changed and some things that should not be changed. And one of those is family."
Oh, interesting. All right. Well, you're going to have to enlighten me a little bit more about this controversy, Dolce & Gabbana. When we come back, you're listening to A Trending with Dawn and Timory. During this break, you can find more information about us at timory.com and dawnjohnsonministries.org.
Timory and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Dawn Johnson Media. This is Trending with Dawn and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Dawn Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit dawnjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Dawn. That's Timory. Talking a little bit about Timory's favorite clothing line. Are you wearing Dolce & Gabbana?
I've never worn Dolce & Gabbana. You know, I have a funny story, and I probably, you know, one of those things, you don't really talk about your family too much on air, especially embarrassing stories, but I have a sibling who a while back was all excited. She, you know, you get those knockoff pair of glasses, and she said, "Hey, look at my glasses. They're Dolce & Gabbana." And I think it was my mom. "Do you mean Dolce & Gabbana?"
No, it actually says right here on the side, Dolce & Gabbana.
It's a D and a G. That was a great guess. She was really little. It was so cute. But I think, Don, you know, we're talking a little bit about these Italian designers who have very strong roots and big Italian families. And Dolce's come out saying a lot of different statements over the last couple of years that are very pro-family, pro-traditional marriage. And you see this in a lot of their artwork. But I love where he talks about, not too long ago, about how you can't just have everything. He says, "I can't have a child, and sometimes it's good to deprive myself of something." And he basically talks about how there's a natural path of life and things shouldn't be changed. And he says family itself shouldn't be changed.
Huh. Yet here he is, a man who has lived the gay lifestyle, including being married. I don't know if they were officially married.
He had a partner for some time.
But is pro-family and pro-natural law in many ways. Like, here's the natural way of things. We must conform ourselves to it. This is the way things are, including family, including whether or not we should put children into the world in a particular way. He has views about that.
In vitro fertilization, he recognizes that a child needs a mother and a father, and that the synthetic creation of human life, in a sense, isn't following the natural path. One, because it's rejecting that mother and father, but it's just breaking up this family lifestyle that has been with us since the beginning of time, Don.
Yeah. So it's interesting to me that on one hand, he's making a very pro-traditional marriage, which would be undercutting a lot of the pro-gay marriage arguments, frankly. These same natural law arguments that he's making are undercutting the position that I assume he has held in the past, although we're not really sure what his position is at the moment, it seems.
And I think it shows how quick sometimes people are to villainize people who experience same-sex attraction. I mean, even on a personal note, you know, we have a big family reunion each year, and a very dear family member, actually a couple of them, have experienced same-sex attraction lifestyle over the years. And I've talked a little bit about this before in some of my public work, but one person in particular who I have loved has been a huge part of my time dancing, has taught me and has been so important to my life. And it would break my heart if people only ever just saw, well, here is a gay man. He's not a gay man. He's someone who struggled with same-sex attraction and who comes from a great family and loves his family. And I think that we have to respect that not every person who experiences same-sex attraction, one, is living a gay lifestyle, always lives a gay lifestyle. Right. Maybe they come in and out, but also we can't assume that they're in favor of family life that deprives a child of a mother and father.
Indeed, isn't that the mistake that what I would call the movement, like the pro-homosexual movement, as distinguished from people, right? Mm-hmm. Like individuals who have the attraction. I get that. That's separate from the movement. It seems like there is an idea within the movement that if you're going to be pro whatever, gay marriage, that you have to be all in against the traditional family, mm-hmm. against traditional child rearing, against you gotta be anti all of that. Why? You know, on what basis do we have to be anti all of that? It seems like it's undercutting the very movement itself.
Absolutely. Well, and I think you kind of just hit the nail on the head in a sense. You were kind of referring to the group of people who identify as gay. That's actually different from the gender ideology movement, from the transgender movement. There are some people who are experiencing same-sex attraction and they're legitimately struggling with it. There are also groups of people who are pro-transgender and say that gender, men and women are interchangeable. A lot of people who experience same-sex attraction don't believe that men and women are interchangeable. It's actually contradicts itself in many ways. And so I think it's interesting as we're continuing to look at these different pieces. I mean, there's a piece that came out from LifeSite News just recently. The title is, "I Came Out as Gay and I Left My Family Behind. I Can't Believe How Selfish I Was." And the story walks through where he had left his family and how his partner actually ends up sharing how sorrowful it is how the same-sex attracted couple is living up in the Rocky Mountains. And here's this little girl calling her dad. You know, the partner answers and the little girl says, "May I please speak to my daddy?" And how even as a partner, he recognized there was something wrong there, that his partner wasn't there with his child and his family.
Yeah, the effect that all of these movements really have on children, we're just now, I think, starting to see how devastating that has been. And it does seem to be hopefully opening a few people's eyes.
Yes.
As to whether or not this is an entirely healthy thing to do.
Yes, exactly. Well, and I think that that's part of it. We're seeing a lot of people who are getting involved in the pro-life movement, fighting against contraception, the harm it's bringing, and people who are speaking out more and more out against gender ideology. And one of the things that we're seeing is a lot of people are realizing that in fighting gender ideology, this idea that men and women are interchangeable, two men can adopt a child and that doesn't harm a child, well, a lot of these advocates are recognizing that there's more to the picture and that we need to be doing more for the children who are struggling after the experience of their parents' divorce.
We've talked about how the millennial generation is actually trending more conservative, more
yes.
pro-family.
Yes.
Because they have come out of these broken homes and they don't want to do that to their kids.
Yeah.
And I think we'll see the same thing with pro-gay families.
You are seeing
the
it already.
Children being raised
yes.
in same-sex families are saying, you know what? That was not all that it should have been.
And they are. And their testimonies were huge in the testimonies at Obergefell versus Hodges. But no one listened to what these people have to say. Grown adults, young children. And it's interesting because I'm seeing in a lot of cases that I think our greatest tool, Don, for evangelization right now with the gender ideology movement is actually appealing to and talking to people about the brokenness they themselves have experienced.
Mm.
A great example of this LifeSite News piece, this man talks about how, you know, getting involved in the fighting against transgenderism and gay marriage and so forth, he saw the need to advocate for these children and how a lot of the time when people are criticizing the pro-family movement, us, for maybe being harsh or unfair toward people who identify as gay and lesbian and their children, that actually sometimes there's a deeper wound there and they're not just mad at you, they're mad at the issue. And the same thing with abortion. Remember, for a long time, people were missing the fact that they were being so pro-baby, they were missing the fact that women and men in front of them were post-abortive and hurting and they were coming out defensively.
Right.
Same thing today. There's this great dialogue here where this man's criticizing someone who's in the pro-marriage movement and the person finally says, "Did you live with your mother? Were your parents split up?" And the person starts to go, "Well, yes. And I didn't really have a relationship with my father. I never saw him." And starts to go down the path and how he wishes he had a relationship with his father.
Yeah.
Well, that points to the need for a mother and a father.
The breakdown of the family has been so devastating to our culture, to the church.
Yes.
It's Satan's premier weapon, I would suggest. Let me point out one of the ways that we as Christians are going to be attacked. A ridiculous piece of propaganda in Good Housekeeping just this past week, in fact. The headline is, "I had four boys until one of them told me she was really a girl." And the subtitle is, "As early as 18 months old, Kimberly Shapley's son started showing signs he identified as female. Now, the Christian mom shares how she learned to embrace Kai's transition for her child's happiness and safety." Now, here's how propaganda works. You have to get an anecdote from one of the group that is most opposed to you on your side. And so it's interesting to me how this conservative Christian mom, they take great pains in this good housekeeping. Good
yes.
housekeeping is what
it's all
is.
PR. You've got to
oh,
say,
it's all propaganda.
Yes.
So you get this conservative Christian mother who tells you this story about how she had three boys and then the fourth boy liked to do more, quote, feminine things,
mm-hmm.
wasn't so rowdy as the other boys, and liked to play with dolls and dresses and all the rest of it. And so now she has started treating him as a girl. 4 years old.
Four years old,
wow. Timory.
This is heartbreaking. You know, I always wonder, Don, I don't know about you, maybe it's different, but I grew up in the mountains. I loved to run around barefoot. I loved to play in the mud. Some of my favorite toys, scandal,
oh, no.
were guns,
oh, no.
play guns.
You know, well, we would have referred to you as a tomboy.
A tomboy.
Yeah.
But you know what? People never made that pressure or, oh, well, your child's a little boy or she's behaving like a little
Imagine
boy.
Imagine that. Oh, she plays with guns.
She only plays with other
Let's
little
cut your
boys.
Hair real short and start calling you just Tim. Can you imagine, Timory, the danger that this kid is in now?
Well, and what happens is that these same families then say, okay, well, we've got to start giving our child hormone replacement therapy. Oh. And when you do this to a prepubescent child, you damage and alter the interior makeup of that child that is going to create lifelong consequences for their health.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is so ridiculous, so dangerous that you would start to physically manipulate, not just emotionally and psychologically, which you are already doing,
yes.
but physically manipulate your four-year-old child. I can't. I mean, boys do the same thing. Guess what? I know lots of little boys that we would say have feminine traits. Okay. Right? I mean, so?
A dear friend of mine not too long ago, we were talking about this, and he says, my son was running around in tutus a couple months ago. He goes, I was terrified. He said, I didn't know what to do. I just went, okay, I'll let him do what he's doing. I'll just kind of ignore it. And sure enough, it was a phase.
Of course it is. All right. You're listening to Trending with Dawn and Timory. We will be right back after this.
From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending.
Trending.
With Dawn and Timory, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Dawn. I'm here with Timory Millington, talking about kids that maybe don't line up with the stereotype for boy or girl. A horrendous piece. I'm sorry. I just don't have much sympathy for the type of propaganda that Good Housekeeping put out this past week about a, quote, Christian mother who is transitioning her little boy to be a girl at 4 years old.
This is child abuse.
It absolutely is. And, Timory, before the break, we were talking about how children, they have different characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a boy and three girls, and, yeah, some of my girls, you know, have more masculine traits, I guess. And so what? I thought that the woman's movement was supposed to break down all this stereotype stuff, right? I thought we weren't supposed to label people like we did in the past, right? Like, a little girl didn't have to grow up to be all of those feminine things.
That's
and a little boy.
That's not even labeling. It's not limiting, in a sense.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I thought it was supposed to be taking away the limits, taking away the things that we had to be if
yes.
you were a boy or a girl. No, we're actually limiting them more by physically changing them into a stereotype. It's
yes.
craziness.
We've taken it too far. You just nailed it. Like, we've gone from the perspective of saying, let's not force women to just be in the home, right?
Yeah.
Let's not force men and say, well, you can't have any type of artistic skills whatsoever because that's feminine. That's wrong to say. But what's really wrong is to now say, well, you're not a boy, even though you're physicality, your biochemical makeup.
Yeah.
yeah. Even though you're a boy, even though your chromosomal knowledge points to the fact that you're a boy. And I mean, even just, you have kids, you have four kids, right?
Yeah.
You see as your kids grow up, the changes
oh,
they go
goodness.
Through puberty and their
changes
voices
sometimes
change.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
like on a dime.
Well, and that's part of God's creation of that science. The body starts to develop these different hormones. The child begins to become aware of their sexuality, not until they're much older, even if they've been exposed to pornography at a young age. A lot of the doctors and psychologists say that if the kids are trying to act out on what they see in pornographic images, they actually don't know what they're doing. They have no clue. But as they grow older, with hormones, testosterone, estrogen, all the different chemicals working in our body, the body actually begins to develop and function in more as male, more as female. Not as how you're treated as a male,
right.
but as your body is working with the testosterone. Even the protrusion of like the forehead and the chin a little bit more defined in men is actually from testosterone development.
Yeah.
Same thing with the narrower hips and the broader shoulders.
So now they're going to what? withhold testosterone from this little boy and start...
Or no, pumping the child with estrogen.
Full of estrogen?
But then this is going to impact puberty. This is going to impact
everything.
This is going to impact also depression, anxiety. Also, they're putting synthetic versions into the body that are group 1 carcinogens. So you're telling me it's okay to put group 1 carcinogens in a 4-year-old child?
A 4-year-old. Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's so anti... person. That's the thing. A lot of these things are, oh, well, we want to be loving. No, you're not being loving by manipulating your 4-year-old.
Yes.
Changing him into what you think, right? And again, it's not a pro-choice in any way sort of deal, mm-hmm. is it? You're making decisions for your child. Why don't you just let him grow up?
For your adolescent child,
and,
by the way.
And see what happens. Because you're right. I mean, there's all sorts of phases that kids go through.
Like tucking in your shirt all the time. You know, when the little boys go through that stage, they like will not stop untucking their shirts. My brother drove me crazy when he did that.
What, his shirt was supposed to be tucked in and he would untuck it?
No, he always would keep it tucked. T-shirts, everything, that constantly tucking in the shirt.
That's like a Canadian thing. You got to tuck in the T-shirt.
Is your shirt tucked in right now?
No, of course it's not tucked in. What, am I in Canada? No, I'm a T-shirt. This is Southern California. Everything's untucked, you know? You got to know. Yeah, styles. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Styles are genetic, too. Hey, here's a positive story about the HBO series Girls. And I don't think I'd ever thought I would have said that sentence. Because I've seen little clips of Girls only enough to know that I do not want to watch this show. I mean,
I'm not a watcher of the show
nothing
Girls.
Nothing that Lena Dunham does, I really, to be honest, I just really want to watch. She is a very pro-abortion, pro-bad feminism, if you will, right?
Yes.
Like, she's out there. She's very outspoken. She says a lot of things that I disagree with. And the show just comes across as gross to me. A lot of, like, the little clips that I've seen, just disgusting. Now, again, some of that's on me. I need to have a more holistic view of Lena Dunham. And it seems that her upbringing, she actually wrote an autobiography not that long ago, pretty hard, what I would call hard. I don't think she looks at it as such, but I think very...
Rough family
life.
Yeah,
I think so. Mm-hmm. I think so. And so, you know, we need to take that into account. But here's the thing. You know, we want to end the show on a positive note. And it's sort of like with Dolce & Gabbana, where reality is still there. You know, you say what you want, but reality is still reality. And sometimes the truth just bubbles to the surface. And as pro-abortion as Lena Dunham is, I mean, and I don't say that lightly. I know some people don't like the term pro-abortion. No, she's pro-abortion. She's the one who said recently that she wished she could have had one at some point so she could share it with everybody. I mean, she's...
Share her story.
Yeah, I mean, she's really out there as far as being on the pro-abortion bandwagon. Well, this season on Girls, apparently, and I'm taking this secondhand. This is from a reviewer at The Federalist who enjoys the show, frankly.
You mean you don't watch Girls, Don?
Yeah, I really don't. But what happened was Hannah, the character, gets pregnant after a week-long summer fling with a surf instructor who wants nothing to do with a baby. All right, so she's pregnant. She's in her mid-20s. She doesn't make that much money. She decides to keep the baby. And not only does she keep the baby, but every time the baby is discussed in the show, it's a very positive pro-baby thing, right? I'll actually read a little bit from this review. Each person Hannah tells she's pregnant is instantly taken aback by the information, elated or angry, curious or excited. Whatever their response, though, it's certainly not a reaction one would give to a random blob of cells. When she's having sex with Adam, this character, in one of the episodes, they actually stop and say in the middle, "I feel like we have an audience." She laughs and smiles, and the viewers understand this is a baby, right? She understands that if I want this child, it's already a baby.
Well, and this points to the difference. And there was actually, I believe, in earlier season in Girls, there was actually an abortion that took place on the show.
Very sort of flippantly.
Yes, and they're very pro-abortion, very no big deal. Oh, I can't go for a run because I had an abortion yesterday. Very just kind of disregarding it, no big deal. And I think that this is what's interesting. There's a difference between a wanted and an unwanted. If it's wanted, it's a baby. If it's unwanted, it's a fetus, it's unrecognized, it's no big deal.
Yeah, how does that work out logically?
Yeah, and I think it's just totally inconsistent. So while it's awesome to see a pro-life piece, we've got to point out the inconsistencies of it's all fair and fun if it's wanted, but if it's unwanted, it's the unmentionable. We don't talk about it. You can't criticize.
Yeah, it's so upside down. Like, on what basis would the mother be able to speak that baby into existence?
Yes.
I don't know. It just seems like at some level, everybody knows the truth.
Yes.
Everybody knows it's a baby.
Well, and I wouldn't even say that that was a pro-baby show. I would say that it was a pro-woman show and a pro-woman getting to choose what she wanted. The only reason that baby is alive is because she decided she wanted it to be.
Yeah, and does that make sense to anyone? I'm just wondering. It's you know, we've talked about this. This is nothing new within the pro-life movement. We've pointed out this inconsistency for years. It's interesting coming directly from Lena Dunham, though, on the HBO series Girls. Hopefully that logical inconsistency wakes a few of the viewers up and maybe even some of those actresses.
Well, and I think that this is what we can take from this is that the reality is a lot of women, young women, are watching the show Girls. It's a very popular show. A lot of people know who Lena Dunham is. And I think that we can use it to point out the inconsistencies, especially to a new generation of young women who are growing up in a very pro-contraception, pro-abortion mindset, and even if they're just pro-contraception, they always have the attitude that abortion is a fail-safe. So let's point out the inconsistency.
Absolutely. All right. You can, in case you're not aware, invite Timory or me to speak at your events. Timory, you have a couple of events coming
up. I do have a couple events just this month. Next week, oh my gosh, it's the end of April already, I will be in Silicon Valley. I'll be speaking at Our Lady of Peace, the Theology of the Body series. I'll be sure to tweet some stuff out, but that'll be not this Tuesday, but next Tuesday. And then, so that'll be Tuesday. I'll be up there in Santa Clara. So it's the heart of Silicon Valley for young adults. I'll be talking about science and the beauty of sexuality. And then 2 days later, so next Thursday, we're going to be in Riverside speaking at the Elevate program for young adults. And I'll be doing a series on theology of the body to be followed up in a couple weeks there with a defense of marriage as well.
Nice. You know, Timory, I met a gentleman at my parish. I was doing an event the other night and he came up and was so excited that we're now doing the show together.
Yay.
He saw you at a pro-life event, I believe here in Orange County, a year or two ago, and was blown away by your talk. He was just raving. Oh, Timory is so amazing. She had the crowd on fire. It was awesome. I'm so glad you're doing the show together. So yes, you will enjoy listening to Timory speak. Make sure you go to those. I'll be speaking at St. Vincent de Paul in Huntington Beach coming up this summer.
What are you talking about?
Evangelization.
Evangelization.
Yep. How to reach a culture for Jesus that doesn't believe in truth. All right. We'll see you next week.
This has been Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. Trending. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.